extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, mis compañeros. You got to go back and forth now, guys. League's Cup is coming. 2023 is going to be here soon. Duolingo is your friend. We've got to learn. These leagues are coming together. It's a big
specifically
show today, of
course. Duo. Duo is the character. Duo is the person. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. That's the bird.
Clearly not done Duolingo.
No, it's because I have many, many years of Spanish training from school. I don't need that like Matt. I have to sit on the pot and hit my Duolingo once a day and then crow about it on Twitter. Sorry, Matt. I had to hit you with that one. Coming up on today's show, League's Cup reaction. Wah, wah, wah. Free space. We know it well. Club León, second ever champions in the League's Cup. Cruz Azul, of course, have the honor of being the first. Seattle Sounders had a lead. They had some opportunities to put it away. Perhaps they made a lot of individual errors, and they lost in Las Vegas 3-2. We'll talk about that, and we'll talk about the big changes coming to 2023. I'm kind of joking about it here, but this is transformational. Transformational as in an entire month of the season is going to be just League's Cup. Not going to be Liga MX games. Not going to be MLS games. They are coming together. Every single team, we will go through that, talk about what we think about this new format going forward for League's Cup, as well as the CONCACAF Champions League, which rolls into 2024 with a reimagined format as well. We're talking Wednesday night, bunch of games going down then. We got the weekend. We got the mailbag. We got a good day coming for you. So what's up, guys? How you feeling? I think this is my first show back, Charlie and Dave. I think last week was...
I don't think I've seen Charlie in a month.
Yeah, this feels good. This feels good.
Did you guys get a memo, or is it just a coincidence that we're all wearing the same thing today?
I think just
pure randomness.
The memo came in form of Anders basically digging through a box and sending to us. I was curious who you would get. I knew I would get Sporting Kansas City because this will probably get passed down to my brother.
I knew I was just gonna get the Supporter Shield leaders at the time, and it just happened to be.
The Revs.
Charlie, you want to run that tape? You want us to run that tape back, baby? One person on this show picked the Revs preseason to win a trophy.
Who was that person?
Anders, play my stuff. He doesn't really have it.
It's probably me, right? I picked the double, yeah?
Yeah, for Revs sure.
Revs double?
Maybe.
I was
for
all in?
Sure.
Yeah, all in. Yeah, all in. All right, look, Kick Child and Cancer Month rolls on. Use the hashtag 50 grand. To the efforts to cure childhood cancer, thanks to Continental Tire. We're so thankful to Continental for supporting us for so long and being a part of this show. It's been an amazing run, and I hope it continues with them, and they do great work in the soccer world as well. We'll get to Wednesday night. We'll get to the weekend. Of course, go check out MLSsoccer.com for all the coverage of midweek action, all the highlights, all the commentary on League's Cup. Let's just start with it. Level of disappointment. Dave, level of interest in talking about this, Charlie, because I know last show I was just pulling teeth to try to get you to go League's Cup excitement with me.
Charlie, you want me to go first?
I thought it was you. Okay. Yeah. For me, it was great to see Seattle Sounders again in another final. I feel like this was a missed opportunity. I do believe they should have and could have won this match. And it comes back to when they're up 1-0 and Rui Diaz has that ball that comes off the post.
Ooh, I disagree. I think it was the chance before, by the way.
I agree. But, the one with Roldan wide open that he kind of holds onto the ball. Then he's like, do I shoot? Do I not shoot? And I'm like, Raul, in your life, there's never been a moment you've ever had to ask yourself that. Yes, you just shoot, bro. Just shoot it.
100%. So you can either, A, make it 3-0.
Right.
They would have scored there. But finishing there or dummying it to Montero, who was on the back post alone, which I thought he was going to do. Either way, I think that moment or those two moments ends the game. And then you look at how it ended. They still had a shot if they don't give up that third goal.
Yeah.
Right? So I believe it's a missed opportunity, but it also shows it's those little moments within the match that tend to go to the Mexican side, whoever they're playing, because it's just being in tuned throughout the game that you can't have those lapses.
And that's what Stephen Fry said after the game. His quote was just about we realize in those moments the level of intensity and that level of ability and focus, that little half percent. But to me, what stands out is you watch Seattle for three games against three of the best sides in Liga MX, and they were able to play their game. They didn't have to come and change what they did because these Liga MX clubs are so much higher than them, right? And I think in the past, we've seen in CCL, some of the best teams MLS has put together drop 11 behind the ball and play unorthodox or play a different style just to try and get a result. That wasn't the case for Seattle at all. This was their game. They were able to counterattack. They were dangerous in transition. They were the better team in this game against Club León. They created more chances up until that first goal for León, which was, what, the 75th minute? Like, this was Seattle's game. So while I agree with Charlie, it's an opportunity missed because they should have won this and won a final. And in 15 years, if Leagues Cup is a huge thing, this would have been a big trophy that Seattle would have had kind of before this whole thing kicked off. I still walk away saying we're not as far as everyone thinks we are. Now I can probably just keep saying that because the teams in MLS are not getting that final result. But I still look at CCL last year and this tournament where you had MLS teams and Liga MX teams in similar phases of their season. And you saw good MLS teams be able to go toe-to-toe because LAFC was the same last year in their style and knock off big-time Liga MX clubs and get to finals. So for the expanded Leagues Cup, I don't know what it looks like when CF Montreal and FC Cincinnati play against Liga MX sides. None of us really do.
Wow, but are you going to do that to Montreal right now? You're going to lump them in?
Well,
you're going to hit a historic CONCACAF Champions League club.
Yeah. Well, like, no, Montreal Impact.
Right? Like Club de Foot.
Yeah.
By the way, Andres put that in like 50-point font in this rundown. CF Montreal. Just helping me out. I appreciate that from you.
But I still look at it and I say that, like, there's quality. This is Seattle team without Nico Lodero. And that wasn't noticeable in this game. If they had Lodero, I think they win this game. And no Jordan Morris. But, like, they went toe-to-toe and, if not, were better and had the rest of their first team out there besides those two guys. So I don't walk away with the sky is falling from this final or from their performance in this competition. I think NYCFC as well. You know, you lose in a tough one against Pumas. They were there. One of the exciting things about Leagues Cup going forward is it's not going to be last year's team for next year's competition, which is one of the things that I think hurts MLS. It's going to be teams that are in their prime. They're going to be the ones competing for these trophies.
So the one thing I would say is that I don't want to get too excited about results in the Leagues Cup just yet, because it is Seattle did go toe-to-toe, but he did it on home soil, right? They did it in their stadium. They did it at home. Liga MX clubs had to travel, and that will be the case at least to start, it seems, with Leagues Cup in 2023. So there is a difference, I think, between Leagues Cup success and CCL success still. There's a reason why when you go to El Volcan or wherever it might be in Mexico that you might have to play just a little bit different. There's a reason for that. And I think Steph Fry had a blinder in his press conference. I thought one of the better quotes, and to go along with what you were saying, Dave, was, quote, "I still sense when we face Mexican sides how aggressive and hungry they are. That's still a difference from our league. That would be something that would be good to absorb into our own squad, that arrogance. It's good experience, and hopefully we can learn something. You always want to play against good squads to improve yourselves." And that's why I'm excited about the Leagues Cup, because I think it sets for every club in the league, not just the top four or five each year, a standard that they have to rise to meet. And Seattle almost rose to that standard. It really wasn't collectively where they fell down, right? It was individually. The first goal, they lose track completely at the back post. I mean, Jimmy Madrada, he was probably pushing way forward because that's what the Sounders do with their outside backs. But you have two guys wide open at the back post. Okay, that's an individual mistake, probably. The second goal, clearly an individual mistake. The ball gets taken off Xavier Arriaga. The third goal, another mistake, the PK. Or am I getting those two confused? Either way, it doesn't matter. Shane O'Neill should not have gone into that challenge.
PK was the second goal.
Yeah, either way, it doesn't matter. They're all individual mistakes. And does Nuhu make that challenge? You have to ask yourself that. You said there were two first-team guys out. Well, there were definitely three and possibly three best 11s because Nuhu was out as well. This is certainly a missed opportunity.
Start Brad Smith, but
yeah,
you're going to rotate guys.
Yeah, this was a missed opportunity for sure. It's not a tragedy. Sounders fans aren't like crying into their pillows this morning.
No.
But this was an opportunity, and I think they sensed it, to sort of lay down a marker. And they've already done it to a large degree, being, I would say, probably the most successful MLS club against League MX opposition. But every club is going to need to have these moments. Maybe the disappointing ones, and many have, but hopefully also the triumphant ones, where we start to prove to ourselves as players, coaches, fans, administrators, yada, yada, throughout the U.S. and Canadian soccer systems, that we can stand at that level. But I think it would be naive probably for us to look at the Sounders and extend that grace to the rest of the league. Like, there's a lot of room to be made up. And that's why I get excited about this future Leagues Cup. And we'll get into that in one more second, because there's a lot to dig in with that one. And it's just because it will force every single club in this league to face a different standard, a different style, and either sink or swim. And I think those are the moments in which you've got to, you either got to pick yourselves up and find ways to improve, or accept the status quo. And I truly don't believe that Commissioner Don Garber and these owners are going to accept that status quo. At least I hope not. They know it needs to get better. We asked Don that in LA. I sat across from him and said, look, I'm an MLS fan through and through. I watch every single one of these games. I'm desperate for continental success. You and I both know that we're usually disappointed after those games. How do we change that? And that will be the mission, I think, for the next decade for this league. For the Sounders, though, where from here? I mean, they put a lot into this. Sporting KC, who they faced this weekend, by the way, on FS1 on Sunday, the biggest game of the weekend, they were the team that sort of went, not for us this year. We talked about that over and over. I got to witness it. So what now for the Sounders? What did this game tell you, if anything, about where they're going the rest of the way? Are you concerned about the fact that Nicolò Daro went under the knife again? That Jordan Morris, I mean, probably, if they're smart, won't come back super soon, may not come back at all in a truly impactful way. Does this game say anything at all, Charlie, to you about the rest of the Sounders season? Or is this just sort of one to get over, you know, like pound the Pedialyte, get over the hangover and move on?
Well, they play them twice. So I could see them rotating the guys for this
away.
Yes. And for me, this Seattle team is still capable of winning an MLS Cup. When you have Raul Ruiz Diaz on the pitch, I mean, he's just so lethal. And João Paulo, he didn't have the best of games in the League Cup final. So they are so talented. They are deep as well. I don't think Sounders fans are concerned at all. I wouldn't be concerned if I were in the Seattle Sounders locker room, because they have experience. They have talent. Alex Roldan has developed into not only now a player who can just play in the best 11, but he's an impactful player, and he does it with El Salvador on the international stage. And I think that has really helped him continue to grow within this team. And, you know, Christian Roldan, still, I think, underrated, undervalued in this league. Box to box, he gets everywhere. He brings that grit and tenacity to the Seattle Sounders team. And I really like what Yaimar has developed into for them. We know what Nuhu can do for them. And when healthy, this is a top team. So I don't think there's any worries for them. And they're still, their ultimate goal is MLS Cup. That's it.
And, I mean, and to Charlie's point, like, they're a team that's not going to care if they have to go on the road in the playoffs. So I don't think first place and second place is the be all end all for this club. And didn't SKC lose at home in the playoffs last year as the number one seed? So I think for Seattle, like, yeah, they put a lot into this, and that's probably going to affect the way they perform this week. It affected the way they performed last week against Colorado. It's RSL. Not going to RSL. Sorry, it's not going to change.
Rocky Mountain teams, man.
Yeah, it's not going to change the final. What happens at the end of the season? This is a team that if they perform, they'll make it to MLS Cup, and if they don't, they won't. And I don't think it's going to be because a game was home or away, because they're this seed or that seed. It's just going to come down to, in those big moments, who steps up and who's healthy. I think what you saw yesterday was a team that can get to MLS Cup without Nicolò Daro. It'll be a lot easier with him. But I think it's a team that still has expectations that they can win it all, whether he's there or not. And to the point about Ruiz Diaz, we talk about him. He's one of the best goal scorers in MLS playoff history. The assist to Jimmy Madronda was filthy. Like, that lift ball, and he pulls the defense over to the left side. He's has the perfect timing to get Madronda in, the perfect weighted ball, and then Roldan reads it and scores. Those are the things they've grown this year that they didn't have in the past. And it used to just be on Nico's shoulders to kind of create chances when teams were dropped in against them, and now they can do it in more ways.
I would say that there's an opportunity to learn for other MLS teams from this run from the Sounders. And if they're not trying to learn from the Sounders and their roster construction, I don't know what they're doing, especially teams that are below the playoff line right now. Like, Yeah, Jimmy Madronda was a guy they picked up in a trade, almost a, like a throw-in from Nashville, and he's an impactful player. Up and down their entire squad, they get an impact from everybody. And if MLS wants to meet Liga MX head-on, that's what every club is going to have to figure out how to do.
That's what they're doing, right? Miami went and got Chris Henderson. Atlanta went and got Gonzalo Pineda. It's all about culture with Seattle. That's where they get those performances. Because I think we see Jimmy Madrondas and Kellen Rose and Shane O'Neill's picked up on other MLS teams. I think it's about spine and culture that they're able to then perform at that level when they get to Seattle. And that's where I think teams are legitimately, or clubs, just straight up picking off guys out of Seattle setup to try and copy it.
And it would go, I don't think it's gone as well for Henderson in Inter Miami, but I think the same goes for Bruce Arena. People try to pull, you know, people out of his, you know, coaching staff, because he's great at just building team culture. And it's not necessarily the X's and O's, although he's well aware of X's and O's, but he's all about making sure I'm going to get the best 11 players who work well together to play at an optimal level to get results, but also to make sure everyone's bought in. So you're looking at their team now, and whether it's AJ De La Garza or Tommy McNamara or, you know, Matt Polster or Ima Boateng, players who sometimes don't play that much, but come in and are still bought into the system, are a part of it and used throughout the season when they need to rotate to get results. So I think what Seattle does so well is keeping guys engaged, whether they're on the field or not. And so they're always going to be a threat. The challenge for them is they play Colorado twice and they play Sporting Kansas City twice. It is not an easy schedule for the Sounders. So I guess it's navigating what's important come playoff time, getting these results at times. They play midweek against Sporting Kansas City at home on October 23rd. That's not going to be an easy game. Are you planning on resting in between Colorado and LAFC on the road? You know, so I think there's a lot of figuring out for Schmetzer as far as rotation and making sure come playoffs everyone's healthy.
And maybe that was a point in this game that he can learn from as well, because it seemed like the changes were a little bit late coming, whereas Ariel Holan went to his bench and had like a shift change basically and said, okay, we're down 1-0. We need something. I'm going to up the ante here. And up in the ante, they went out and got that win. So for Schmetzer, for this team, in the sense of, you know, intensity, focus for 90 minutes, maybe for the Sounders, this is a learning experience. We talked about on this show, like Schmetzer saying, okay, well, we understand that these tournaments, U.S. Open Cup before otherwise, have helped us build momentum into the second half of our season. And that's what they had done up until this point. Well, maybe they built that momentum a little bit, but maybe they also got a little lesson that they can apply down the line. It was a disappointment for the Sounders, no doubt about it. I agree, an opportunity lost. Before we get to 2023, we do have to heap a little praise on Club Leon. This meant something to them. You could see that it meant something. Mm-hmm. The way they were celebrating, the way that they were having fun with this, they were trying to figure out how to lift that trophy. That thing is massive. That thing is huge. That's like
the bigger the trophy, the more important.
Exactly. It's like you almost have to like wrap two arms around it. It's like a pony keg. What in your sense, Dave, when you watch this Leon side and you look ahead for them, and they're trying to, as Cesar Hernandez said last night on the postgame show, big thanks to him for joining us, try to not break into sort of the Gigantes or at least be considered among them. What was the night, do you think, from a Liga MX and Leon perspective?
You won an international trophy. You put yourself on a stage you'd never been on before. And so that's huge for a club of their size. And as you mentioned, they are not one of the traditional powers in Mexico. As the League's Cup happens, as all of this changes, I think there's an opportunity for these clubs to move out of a stratosphere they've always been stuck in, right? Like, there is a shift now that's happening in Mexico, and Tigres just spent money and was able to do that on their own. Outside of that, it's always been the same few clubs. And so now I think this is an opportunity for a lot of these clubs to look at themselves and say, how do we fit into this new order? And for Club Leon to start it off with an international trophy and make history is huge. And I think it's huge then when you look at going into this playoffs, and can they, you know, push off the back of this like we talked about with Seattle and use this for momentum? That's big as well. So it was a historic moment for their club and for their fan base. And that's part of what this is like building up these trophies to have other opportunities for clubs to prove themselves and sort of stand on top of the heap for a little while.
All right, let's talk about 2023 and what is to come, because it will be everybody. Nobody is getting stiffed here. Everybody gets an invite to the party come 2023. Everybody from MLS, every team from Liga MX coming in late summer. We don't know the exact months. We don't know the exact format, but it seems very, very likely we're looking at groups to knockouts. You have one full month, both leagues taking that month off. They will not play league games during that month. What do you think? I've compared it in my mind to sort of a North American, certainly MLS Liga MX style March Madness sort of deal where you could have, hopefully, and you know, you never know, maybe it won't work out that way, but Cinderella stories. You will have dominant giants that sort of march their way through and everybody hates. You will have just storylines for days. You'll have, I don't know, 80 games that I feel like I'm desperate to see. Like, yeah, do I want to see, was I really engaged by, say, like, Sounders Santos in the semis? Was that a great game? Yes. Was this a great final? It was a pretty good one. I'm curious to see how some of the teams that don't get these opportunities stack up. I want to see how, you know, just to throw a name out there, we saw it this year, Philly and CCL. I want to see how a Minnesota does. I want to see how a San Jose does. If, you know, Mateus Almeida, if he's still there trying to make a run in this, that seems like the sort of thing that he would embrace. You know, cup competitions at Guadalajara were big for him. He got a bunch of shine out of that. I want to see, you know, Austin have to go into that and step up their game. I want to see clubs sit back and say, oh, wow, we have to improve. Over the next 2 years to compete for Leagues Cup, we have to improve. And I hope that's the way it goes. What were your first reactions, Dave, when you saw this news come out? We've been teasing it for a long time. You had to be blind. You had to have your head buried in the sand to not see that Leagues Cup was going to get bigger. We just didn't know how big it was going to get. And this feels pretty big. To me, this is the merger. People talked about a Liga MX MLS merger. I have a Google Doc full of ideas, but that was pie in the sky. There were too many factors. It was never going to happen. And probably, I don't know, depending on your perspective, you could argue it shouldn't. This is it. This is two leagues, 1 month, one league.
Ryan Vanahy in the mailbag says he wants to go Google Doc for Google Doc with you, by the way, because he's.
I don't think he wants that. I don't think he wants
to
smoke.
Fairly robust as well. Let's see what happens.
I don't think he wants to smoke.
We've discussed the joint venture. We spent all of a week in LA talking with Mikel Arriola and Don Garber and us talking about it. So I think everyone knows how we feel about this, the strength that each leagues have, how they're different, how working together can make them stronger, the potential for what they can do together. I think we've laid all that out there. When it comes to this specific announcement with the Leagues Cup, my first reaction was it's bold and that's what's necessary. And there is growth happening for Liga MX and MLS, but if you want to accelerate it, you got to do something unique and you have to do something different. And this doesn't exist. A knockout competition between two different leagues, whether it's group stage or single elimination, taking your seasons off for a month, this is what gets eyeballs because we don't have any comparison. And I think the quality will be good. I think the games will be good. I think the clubs will be locked in and it'll be entertaining and all the things you said. Stakes are high. When it's single elimination, I don't have to explain to you what matters. You come in, you sit down, the TV's on, and it says the winner goes through, and everyone knows what they're watching, and everyone knows why it matters. Hence why we love things like the World Cup and the NCAA tournament. So you'll have all of that. And there'll be momentum to it. One of the big issues with CCL, and at times with Leagues Cup this year, is, okay, that happened, but now we're back 6 weeks later. This is Tejan's playing hot. The Revs are riding Tejan. And next game, the Revs are riding Tejan. And it's that flow, which I think allows fans to get into it. But the big thing is just the uniqueness to me and the potential it has. You're going to get eyeballs early from everyone in the world because you've never seen it before. Same as you saw for the All-Star game. And then I think from there, because the quality in the two leagues is growing and does exist, people are going to see how good it is. I don't think the issue is the quality. I think the issue is getting people to tune in sometimes. And this has that potential. So I'm really excited for it. Also, I like soccer. 80 yeah. more games. Give it to me, baby.
Yeah, whatever it's going to be. And look, it's sanctioned by CONCACAF, which is a big deal. In doing so, that means
Alexa,
that there's going to be...
Alexa's talking to you.
Really? She hears CONCACAF? Yeah. And she's just like...
She heard Leagues Cup and she was like ordering 47 jerseys, one of each team.
Would you like me to set an alarm for 2023?
Yeah.
Exactly.
For me, I'm hyped as can be for this. When I heard about it, I thought, whoa. What I'm most intrigued about, you touched on it, Weeby, is like Pachuca, Puebla, Necaxa, Mazatlan playing against Cincinnati, you know, Minnesota, some of the teams that aren't winning trophies all the time. I want to see the basement of each league, so to speak, the teams that aren't doing so well, how they stack up against each other. And it just brings awareness about some of those teams, Tijuana, Pumas, some of those.
Juarez.
I think those fan bases, right, coming to watch.
I love how you just straight up, you know, just hit Pumas with a stray. Like, they're one of the gigantes. You're like, yeah, look at these basement teams. Puma.
Right now.
Chivas. Yeah, no, I know. Things can change quick.
Exactly.
Things can change quick. And look, they're playing for a lot of money. We have to say that. That matters. Mm-hmm. Like, if you were in your professional life and somebody was like, hey, over the next month, you're going to do this project, whoever wins it gets like, you would be like, yes, I'm all in. I'm extra motivated for this. That's just the way it works. That's humanity. And then there's 3 CCL spots. And that's a very big deal too. So you have a month essentially to play for this opportunity to go into it. And I just like the cadence. And you can mix in CCL here, and you have to, because it's part of the qualification process. Fall is about these regional cups that qualify into CCL, whether it be Leagues Cup for Liga MX in Mexico, the Central American Nations, 20 teams will go into that. Caribbean, 10 teams will go into that, and you'll push them all into the spring into CONCACAF Champions League, which is now 27 teams. You have a round one, which is, I think, 22 teams, 11 teams go head-to-head, home and away, and then you're into the knockout round. Like, it is starting to make sense to me. And a lot of points in the past, because of change, because of sort of the way the competitions worked, and as you said, Dave, the breaks, it didn't always make a ton of sense. It was just sort of scattershot, it felt like. It feels to me like you can now understand your calendar a little bit better. And let's be honest, the calendar is going to change. You got to be, like, again, headed buried in the sand if you're not paying attention to what's going on at FIFA in 2023 and the World Cup and international windows and how that might change literally everything as it pertains to scheduling in this sport. Like, that could, you know, that's what MLS and Liga MX and every club in the world and every league in the world are preparing for. So I think the cadence is right. I think the equity in the new Champions League is right. They're giving opportunities for Central America and the Caribbean that weren't there before. I might quibble with just the spots for the Caribbean. I would like to have more. I'm not exactly sure that CPL should have 2 spots when they also have a route in from Canadian Championship. But I think this 2023 to 24 cadence and what it will be beyond, and I hope they stay consistent with it, has an opportunity to really elevate the region. And that's what we're going for here. That's what you said, Dave, right? And I completely agree. Montagliani, Areola, Garber, there's a responsibility and there should be a level of ambition to say we can get on the level of CONMEBOL. We can get on the level of UEFA. If you're not trying to do that and support all the clubs top to bottom in your confederation and nations, what are you doing?
Like, what happens to MLS All-Star Game?
I don't know. It's a good question.
Because here's my thought process with MLS All-Star Game. You know, you talked about playing against Liga MX All-Stars, kind of not really known for a lot of people who are just all about MLS. Now you bring in the League's Cup tournament, you're starting to see now all the stars within those teams. So now it makes sense because you have an idea of who they play for, what they do. There might be more of an attraction to that setup. But then there's always we want the East-West back. Like, let's bring that back because all these teams are loaded now, and it makes sense because we have a fantastic league with a lot of star players, and to see them playing against each other in an East-West matchup, that it kind of pumps me up as well. So.
There are some questions. Certainly are some questions. Any other things you guys are feeling or thinking or wondering about League's Cup? And look, there are people out there that aren't into it or aren't convinced by it. I completely respect that. It is early days. I'm not asking you to get on the Andrew Wiebe train and jump on Twitter and be like, this is the best thing of all time, woo, woo, woo. And that's just the way I feel. I think it has incredible potential. I'm extremely excited to see where it can go to be entertained by the games and to see the kind of change that it can potentially usher in the way that soccer is consumed and run in this country and in Canada. So I'm excited, but I understand why people are like, hey, you know what? Does this take away from the U.S. Open Cup? Does this take away from Major League Soccer, the league, when you're away for a month? Now, Commissioner Don Garber has reiterated a couple times here in this last week that the 34-game schedule will stay. So if you're worried about MLS games going away, don't be. You should also probably just be ready for the season to be a little bit longer. It needs to be. We've seen that with some of the congestion this year starting in April, which is like the latest start I think they've ever had since I was covering this league. Last year we started in late February, I want to say.
Last week of February.
I mean, that's more in line with what you're seeing. And if you talk to coaches and GMs and players, and certainly international coaches, they would tell you MLS needs to have a shorter break. Like any of the top coaches in this league have been saying that for a long time. So be ready for some change. Be ready for a different, a different outlook in 2023. That's just natural. That's what's coming.
Yeah, I also think one of the things when you talk to executives around the league that I've had conversations is it's different building a team for playoffs than it is for the regular season. And so you see some teams that are more regular season heavy, and they have success over the course of 8 months, and their fans get to come and watch them win. And other teams are just trying to get in the playoffs. And then they can be dangerous in those playoffs. You've now added a second competition that's the same setup. So you look at teams and you say, this is a team that has a distinct style that can play week to week at that level. Their fans are happy because they're watching them in the league be successful. Now, if I'm a fan of a team where I look at them and say, you know,
like
we could
who?
Be really
like
dangerous.
Who? Like who?
Charlie, deal with your own stuff. Talk to your own team. If I look at a team and I say, we're a team that can be really dangerous in the postseason, we're a team that can sit deep and hit on the counter. Let's say Minnesota. Minnesota went to the Western Conference Finals last year. We all thought that they would be super successful in the regular season this year. They are probably more of a playoff team. You get into a playoffs where you drop five behind the ball. Ozzy Alonso doesn't play all the time. When he does, he's good. Reynoso's magic. Now you've got two versions of the playoffs for that team to be successful. And so I think you've upped the ante on teams that are relevant for longer throughout the season and what you're building towards. I think you've upped the ante on if you want to build a team that is maybe less regular season heavy and more 4 weeks knockout competition, we can beat anyone on any day heavy. Now you've got a second ability to do that. Because while the Open Cup exists and some teams get into CCL, with the way it's spread out, it comes down to a depth situation and who can you play on the weekend, who can you play midweek. That's not the case anymore. You basically have the playoffs twice. And so I think that'll be really interesting for some of the teams in the league. And it'll be huge for some fan bases or coaching staffs or front offices to say, we've had this success this year. It doesn't all hinge on one competition.
I do hope it also forces teams to just build teams that can hopefully do more throughout. We'll see. There have been steps taken. U22 was a big step forward. We always see changes in the way the roster composition works. So that'll have to be something that people that don't just sit on a podcast like we do and talk about this stuff figure out. But look, the best thing for me in a league-wide sense, I think, is that more teams get exposure, and that's not just in CCL. I was trying to go through the new, not just Leagues Cup. I was trying to go through the new CCL format and figure out how many MLS teams could be in this every single year. So the most possible is 10 out of 27, but that would require MLS winning Leagues Cup, getting second place in Leagues Cup, and getting third place. And, well, I am an optimist, but I don't think that is a possibility and not a probability.
Wait, can I ask a bad question here?
Yeah, go ahead.
In 2023, will it be 27 or 29?
20 what teams?
Yeah, in MLS.
Yeah, I think it'll be 29.
Right. Okay. You said 27. For this conversation.
Well, 20, this is the confusing thing. 27 teams go into CCL in 2024. So that's the 27 I was talking about. Look, it's hard.
Oh,
we'll get there.
We'll get there.
But the minimum
27 CCL clubs can be MLS.
Yes, correct. The minimum for MLS going into CCL now is 5. That's bare minimum. Like, you would lose Open Cup, you would lose Canadian Championship, you wouldn't get any spots in Leagues Cup.
Shout out.
We will likely see 8 MLS teams in the CONCACAF Champions League going forward. To me, that's a good thing for MLS. And if you look at the way the rest of the region gets in, it's a good thing for the region as well. You have 6 Central American teams that get in. That is more than is getting into the round of 16 now. Liga MX will probably have the majority in there. They'll probably have the numbers, and it'll be on MLS and Central America and others to try to, you know, usurp their hegemony. Like, they are still the giant. We've got to get there. But this is more opportunities to get there, more opportunities to figure out how to get there.
Can I just throw this out there for people?
Yeah, go ahead.
Because I know we're CONCACAF people, and so I think people are sitting there saying, because you mentioned the Caribbean teams, there's only one that will get into the final CCL, and people asking if it's fair.
What needs to happen is CONCACAF needs to generate revenue to distribute to clubs around the region. That's why this matters. To create stability through Liga MX and MLS, which are your two biggest leagues, your two most stable leagues, to generate revenue, to be able to distribute to those clubs, to be able to build facilities, to be able to retain players at time, to be able to bring veterans back like we've seen in Costa Rica over the last few years as Saprissa and Alajuelense are starting to bring back the golden generation to finish off their careers. For all of that to happen, CONCACAF has to generate money to distribute to all of these federations. And so while it sounds at times unfair, I think in the end, it's going to strengthen the entire region, not just in the U.S., Canada, and Mexico.
Yeah, and look, it is two Caribbean teams. One goes straight into the round of 16 if they win the Caribbean Cup. You have Central American teams going in, one automatically in, and then the rest coming in that initial like round one qualifying phase. I think it is much more equitable than it was before. I'm excited for where this region is going. And I think we'll all just have to take the time to get used to it. Let us know what you think. 401-206-0MLS, extratime@mlssoccer.com. Let's talk about some actual soccer that was played on Wednesday night around Major League Soccer. Insane New York Derby. And they do it all again this weekend. 1-1, couple red cards. Tati Castellanos puts them up. And then like 98th minute of stoppage. Penalty on Maxime Cheneau. You are the instant replay guru, Charlie Davies. Do you agree with the red card on Keaton Parks? Do you agree with the penalty on Maxime Cheneau? Those are two plays that this whole thing sort of hinged on.
Yes, I don't agree with the red card. I've watched this play 25 times at least, and I did it in slow-mo. And if you watch closely, from the start of the challenge, when Keaton Parks is going down, it is from the back, but it's also from the side. He's trying to wrap around his leg and win the ball in the attacking half. Drew Yearwood rushes over with his right foot quickly and plants it in front to try and protect the ball. The studs never come in contact with Drew Yearwood on the challenge itself. The studs were exposed, but it didn't make contact, and it's not enough force. It's unfortunate that his right foot gets caught and tangled, and it looks like that could have been really the issue at hand, because it happened so quickly. So for the center referee, Ishmael Alfath, you're thinking, oh man, this is from behind and it's dangerous and it was aggressive, but it wasn't. When you slow it down, which he was signaled because he gave a red card at the time, he was signaled by the VAR official to go check it out on the monitor, because it obviously for him, there was a chance to overturn it and change it to a yellow card, which I thought he was going to do when you replay it. He didn't. He stuck with the red card. So that was, for me, a decision that probably went the wrong way. I think it was yellow card worthy. Now on the handball, it's close range. It's a shot. But the problem for Cheneau was the hand was moving up. The arm was moving up and not away from the ball, behind his body to tuck it. Yes, it's pretty close, but the arm is still exposed. It's not super tight. It's not super extended, but it's not super tight to his body. And the arm is moving up towards the shot as opposed to away from the shot. So I think in that case, when it goes to review, you have to give a penalty.
I could see where NYCFC would be coming from, saying it hit his torso first. But you know, in the new IFAB rules, it doesn't matter if it deflects off your own body and hits your arm. It's all about arm positioning, and you get punished if it's out or if it's deemed to be an unnatural position. So look, yes, to me, NYCFC, it's a big problem that you be complaining about referee calls after a game like this that you are leading, that you should win. Dave, do you have any concern about that? It feels like every other show we go from, damn, NYCFC are legit, to, oh man, NYCFC have reason to worry. They have been sort of yo-yo all season long.
Well, they have a really high floor. So we say yo-yo, but it's between 6th and 2nd in the Eastern Conference, right? Because the other teams we're talking about, can they make the playoffs or not? They have one of the best backlines in the league. They weren't available basically all summer because of international call-ups. So that affects the performances they were able to put in. When you have Cheneau, when you have Cayens back in there, they remain now one of the best backlines in the league. To me, the one thing you look at is it's a team that's geared a lot around young attacking players. And so if it's not Maxi or Tati showing up, I don't trust them to win in must-win single elimination knockout games. Basically the opposite of Seattle, which we just talked about, which is, you know, their guys are going to show up, know what they have to do. They don't care where and how It happens. This is a club that has what, one playoff game in their franchise's history. Is that right? Someone's going to.
I think it's one.
And it may have been a first leg, or they won one round once. So that's where they stand to me. They have the talent to make MLS Cup. They have the talent to win the whole thing. But there is a huge question mark in those big moments, in those big games, what they can do. And outside of those two guys, Tati and Maxi, I can't guarantee performances from everyone else. And so if they're off that day, this is a club that can have some problems. And I think what we've seen over the last few weeks is mental lapses from guys who are playing more than expected, playing in positions unexpected, and that the top end talent hasn't been able to carry them. But I don't think we should read too much into it yet because of the international absences they had over the last 2 months.
By the way, Red Bulls won the expected goals battle in this one. So it wasn't like some dominant performance from NYCFC. The Red Bulls just hadn't taken their chances until they got that PK. They do it all again this weekend. You can check that out Saturday. Yankee Stadium, 8 p.m. Eastern, MLS Live on ESPN+. Are the Red Bulls dead, Charlie? Would you bury the Red Bulls? Who would you bury right now in the standings? Like, we got the X. We didn't say, I don't know how we didn't get there because we're talking about the Sounders, and all of a sudden Charlie's like, but let me tell you about the Revs. You know, you want to talk about Bruce Arena? How about Brian Schmetzer? Here's Bruce Arena for
Wait,
you.
Let can we just there. Can we talk about more of last night's game, or are we burying teams first?
No, you can talk about more last night. No, you can go last night, and then we'll bust out the shovels.
I mean, Charlie, you're the one covering the game, but we kind of already know with Bruce Arena, so we stopped talking about it. They played a C-plus team, a B team, on the road yesterday. And while Chicago's had their struggles, they got Jimenez back. They had Aliceta available. They win that game. And you look at a guy who won in MLS 1.0, won in MLS 2.0, won in MLS 3.0. And now what are we at now? Give me a number.
I was at four personally.
And now he's going to win a trophy that we always joke he doesn't even care about.
Right.
May set the points record in MLS 4.0. And while the conversation has never existed that he's not the greatest coach in MLS history, he's just adding to it and cementing it. And they show him on the sideline and he's calm and he's fine. And he's got Teal Bunbury and Edward Kiza and Trousteson running the 10. And it's a whole new squad, and they still get the win. They drew NYCFC with this group as well. It is genuinely unbelievable how successful he's been. And now in three stops, we won't talk about the Metro Stars or Red Bulls, whatever. Mm-hmm. He gets one gimme. I don't know. Yeah, whatever you want to say.
As a golfer, it's a mulligan. I know.
He gets a mulligan. That was the time I was like,
I give myself one mulligan per nine, but inevitably, come on.
And Bruce gets one every other decade. So he gets a mulligan every 20 years.
Well, did he have to use one on the U.S. national team? I feel like he did. Maybe he had to use two on that one, right?
Bob Bradley will tell you that.
Or did Jurgen have to use one and then he had. Okay. So it's one and one. Jurgen and Bob. Although Jurgen's didn't help him, he got dragged off the course.
No, not really. But it's just mind blowing, and it's ridiculous.
I thought it was.
I couldn't agree with you more.
It felt inevitable, Charlie. It felt inevitable. And I'm watching this game as I'm waiting for Leagues Cup to go on, and I've got everything going. And Nashville's whooping up on Inter Miami, and I'm thinking to myself, there's no way that these Revs, despite these lineup changes, lose to the Fire, right? And then it crept on. You're like, okay, maybe they're gonna have to settle for the draw. And then you start to see the starters come in. You start to see the game change. And when Carlos Hill got the ball on the edge of the box and he drove and he's in shooting position and you're still thinking the angle is bad, can he do it? In my mind, there was no doubt that he would do it. Like, that's this Revs team. That's Carlos Hill this year. For me, it just feels like an inevitability.
Yeah.
When there's an opportunity to change the game, to take the points, they go and do it. They change the game, they take the points, which is why I was so shocked at the weekend they didn't beat the Crew.
Well, that brings me back to the original conversation of they have 59 points. They are on a tear. But I don't feel that the conversation around the Revs is usual for a team on this type of trajectory. So we saw Atlanta United, what they looked like with Almiron and Joseph Martinez and the hype around them. And then LAFC came and stormed away when they ran away with the Sports Shield.
Toronto FC, best team of all time. Yes. That hype was big.
Like everybody's like, oh my God, this team is incredible. Like no one can play. I don't feel that is the same way people talk about the Revolution. People do say they're very good. They have Carlos Heel, who's running the show, and he's a magician, but it's not the same hype. And I think that is in the New England Revolution's favor, because I don't, when teams do get hyped up that way, it really sets them up to fail, because you can't play that level all the time. And so people are kind of like, yeah, they're good, but they're not like, this team's unbeatable, you know? And I think that typically is the narrative when a team has 59 points at this stage in the season.
So just one thing to add there, because I agree with you, is I think the perception of that takes a little time. And with TFC in 2017, they had been to MLS Cup in 2016. So you had already seen them and thought of them, and then they raised their game. With the Red Bulls in 2017, we had already seen them win two supporter shields and get to that level. And then with LAFC in 2018, while they weren't as good in 2017, they were still one of the most entertaining teams in the league. I think they were fourth in the West, maybe third, something like that. This Revs team snuck into the playoffs last year, had a good playoff run, but in a weird year. And now it's really like year one. So that's the only
dominance.
That's the only thing, is all of this takes time. Everyone's perception lags behind what the performances are, because you need to prove it. You need to see it, all those things. And I think that's where the Revs maybe aren't getting that conversation around them the way you'd expect. But if, even with losing Tejan, if they do this next year, then it's talking about where this Revs group fits in the all-time best groups in MLS history.
Right. To me, it's the lack of, other than Carlos, and Tejan's a big piece, I don't know. There's just something about, you're going to groan, the narrative between those other teams and this one. Toronto FC had the narrative of, are we the best team ever? They were sort of the first team to come in. Like, they blew the points record away. They went and got, they had won a title already close to this point of the year in the Canadian Championship. They were tracing a treble. Revs aren't doing that. Red Bulls were doing it in a different way than anybody else. They were this crazy high press team. They had Tyler Adams, who was this sort of a transcendent American talent. That helps. Jesse Marsh in the same way. And as you said, Dave, they'd had all this success before, and it was a question of, can they go and win the playoffs in a style that we haven't seen played this way before? LAFC, come on. Look, Carlos Heel is having an incredible season. It is the best chance creation season of all time. But people respond not to XG and chances created, and he has a crazy amount of assists too. Don't get me wrong. But he missed a month. The same way they're going to respond to Carlos Vela having the best season of all time in MLS history by a country mile. So there are small differences. For the Revs, the way they get there is to win MLS Cup. Or to win a double. If they win a double in MLS Cup, they will have put themselves in that all-time team conversation, period, in my opinion. If you have a points record, a supporter shield, and an MLS Cup, the first ever for your club, when that has been the dream since day one, and you were a day one club, and you have myriad disappointments on your resume in that very moment, they will be in that position. But so far, what if they just win the Shield and they don't get MLS Cup? That LAFC team is remembered, yes, as a great team, but they're more remembered for not getting what they wanted in the end than they are for some of the other stuff, right?
I would disagree.
You don't think so?
The problem here for the Revs is you don't have Tejan Buchanan next year. Adam Buxa is balling with Poland now, and his price tag's going up. That's a player that you invested in to sell, right? So you're losing those two players. Gustavo Bo has been hot early on this year, kind of has kind of cooled off a little bit, but still he's back healthy and fit. You get him going in the postseason, they're going to cause problems. This Revolution team is never out of it. And I talked about it on the broadcast last night playing against the Fire. They could be playing horribly and it's 0-0 or 1-0, they're down. But you know, because they have weapons like Tejan, Adam Buxa, Carlos Heel, Gustavo Bo, that they can score at any minute. Like, they're capable of pulling off something crazy in at any moment within the game. So I think for this Revolution team, that's what kind of is going to keep them alive in the playoff, but also can hurt them if they're not finishing, like you said, in the Columbus Crew game. They played Columbus
off the field.
Off the field. They were in another planet. But when it came to the final third or the final touch, it wasn't there. And come playoff time, expect teams to just defend and bunker, especially if they're playing at Gillette Stadium. You have to put them away.
New England hosting Orlando, by the way, on Saturday. And we'll live on ESPN Plus, 7 p.m. Eastern.
Which is an awesome game, although Antonio Carlos suspended with red card. just the one thing with the Revs, and we'll talk about this more after the season and when it comes, is you brought Trastison in, and I think it takes international. I give international players a year to settle. Mm-hmm. So if he hits the ground where you think he can be next year after you've lost Tajon, and then you look at the front three last night, and it's Kiza, Bunbury, and Boateng, I think between all of them, you have enough production to cover the loss of Tajon next year if Heal is healthy and if you keep the back line. So for the Revs, my expectation is this will at a minimum be a two-year run where they can be maybe not at a record points level, but they are in the conversation as the best team in MLS over the course of that time. And that's credit for planning and building long-term and not just focusing on one trophy. Even if they lose Buxa, you have Gustavo Bo who can obviously
don't forget Matt Turner.
Matt Turner is a tough one. And I don't know what's going to happen with the fullbacks as well. My assumption is Bai is here for a while. John Bell is one of the best backup center backs. If he probably shouldn't be that, and other teams should be calling the Revs every single week, the same as teams should have been calling Orlando last year about Kamal Miller every single week, about getting him in as a starter. But for the Revs, he has value. DeJuan Jones, we've heard rumors, so maybe he goes, although they've already signed what we think would be the replacement there. So it feels like the club building for this is already going, and Charlie knows this, but the front office, the way they've built for under Bruce with Kurt Anolfo and Richie Williams, was to fix the first team first and then fix the academy. So they're hoping that as this generation of players comes through, then they can start to fill in with academy players, which is what Seattle's done, right? Seattle built first team down. They were able to continue to create some success with DP signings. Now you're looking at their depth coming from academy pieces finally in Garth's, what, sixth year, fifth year? So you can start to look at that timeline for the Revolution as well.
Big win for the Revs. Big win for Nashville. Inter Miami at home. That is not a winning proposition for Phil
Neville. It was an away game for Nashville?
Was it? Seems like it. Okay. But it's almost not an away game because everybody
away games, everybody away
wins,
games.
Everyone's 4-0 Inter Miami, Dave. Everybody.
Do you worry about away games for Nashville?
Do we really
worried about
this?
It?
Do you really want to do this right now? When you said Inter Miami were going to make the playoffs,
you spent
is that really where you want
to
go?
15 minutes Monday trying to get me and Kalen to bury Nashville SC.
I expressed slight doubt,
not at all,
about Nashville's ability to stay second in the East. Meanwhile, you're out here guaranteeing. I don't know if you did that, but you definitely said Inter Miami go to the playoffs.
I did.
I'm the one getting flamed.
Yeah, absurd. You are. That's
absurd.
What happens.
Absurd. Hany Mukhtar put on a show. Nashville put on a show. This was a huge result for them after going to Toronto and losing. They do have a heavy away schedule. They go to Chicago. Oh, that's another patsy, by the way, on Sunday. MLS nice. Live on ESPN+. They have an opportunity there. I was just trying to say, you know, there could be a, you know, the shoe could drop for them. Didn't in this one. Hany's got 12-9 on the season.
Mm-hmm.
21 combined goals and assists. He was absolutely on fire this game. They had to take him out early. Didn't have to, but probably a good idea from Gary Smith because he was getting beat up a little bit and he already had two goals. And did he have an assist? I don't know. Either way, he was balling. Is he an MVP finalist? I still think this is Carlos Heels. I said when he scored that game-winning goal, congrats to your MLS MVP for 2021. I believe that will be the case.
Mm-hmm.
Should Hany be one of the top three finalists for that award right now?
So it feels pretty safe to say Rui Diaz is one of them as well, right?
Yeah.
You would think Rui Diaz. You would think Shalloway would have a pretty darn good.
So the question is the third
spot,
though.
Well.
But I think Rui Diaz is locked in, and I think Heel's locked in. So the debate is Hany third.
I think Hani's there. I think Castellanos is also there. I think he's been very good this year. For
DC fans are super pissed off right now that we haven't said Ola Kamara's name in this early conversation, but he is the Golden Boot leader by two goals.
That doesn't matter.
But, yeah,
you're the eighth team in the Eastern Conference.
I completely agree. Thank you for making the point for me. I completely agree.
In all honesty, he does not deserve to be in that conversation of MVP of the league because he has 16 goals on the season. I think he's done extremely well for himself this year with DC United, considering last year, I think at this stage he had two goals, maybe. Yeah. So he looks redefined. He looks like he's found a rhythm and he looks happy. Last year, it looked really tough. So, we talked about DC United last go around. I think with Hernan Losada and those tactics and getting everybody bought in, Andy Nahar looks incredible this year. it's going to take them another year to really challenge, I think, for an MLS Cup. But I do think they're a playoff.
I threw you off with the Ola Kamara stuff. Yeah, is Hany Mukhtar the third MVP finalist in your mind, right now, if you're saying Rui Diaz and Carlos Hill, would you say Hany Mukhtar is the third, or is there doubt in your mind in that sense? Daniel Shalhoub's got 13-6. His team has a better record. It's slight, I know.
Yes,
record. They're first in the West.
I would put Hany Mukhtar as third. I would.
What would you say, Dave?
I think the same. Yeah. Do you want? What would
you
say?
I know you want. I know you want to say. Look at him. Got the SKC jersey on. He wants to throw Shalhoub in there.
Dang
I know.
It! I'm like over here trying to just formulate the case. Oh man. I'm looking for game-winning goals in the stats page, and I can't find it right now.
Shalhoub has a lot. Most of his have been laid on, although that stat's like a little bit tough because if you
it's a contextual stat. It's not exactly perfect.
I don't think there's a wrong answer between either of them.
I mean, this is the thing. This is how tough it is right now. Is that to me, both those guys are, if not on the same level, on similar levels, and the importance to their team. And I'm loath to push him in on two goals against Inter Miami.
And here's the thing that I come to. Sort of to Charlie's point in the Ola Kamara conversation, which is a little bit different, is in an MVP performance, it's not just goals. It's how you affect your team. It's how you dictate the game. And it's how your team plays. And Nashville plays through Hany Mukhtar. And the way he plays dictates the style of the games that he plays in. And while Daniel Shalhoub has been phenomenal, that's not the case with him. You don't play through him. And it's not his actions and his ability with the ball that changes the way your team or the other team, more importantly, plays. And so that's where
I'm not sure I entirely agree with that.
That's fine.
But I will acquiesce to you that Hany is maybe more of an active, like, throughout the game piece affecting that than Shalhoub is.
And I say preach to Goss.
I don't know. Let us know anything. I know what Nashville fans think about this one.
And Nashville is really the only team that scares me in the Eastern Conference that could literally beat the Revs on the road.
He's got the crest on.
Because they are so defensively organized and they can hit you on the counter. They can dominate you on set pieces. We've seen what Walker Zimmerman can do, how he just absolutely dunked on Matuidi. And the disrespect.
Yeah, I like how he got up and he just flexed on him too afterwards.
He's he actually did a dunk.
Yeah. Like,
I missed that somehow.
Yeah, about that one. But they're dangerous at the, you know, they're really good. I think they're well coached, organized, and they do have players like Hany Mukhtar who can step up and do things when they need them to.
What one thing to throw in off this game, I understand it was Inter Miami. They were missing Figal. They were missing LGP. This wasn't a prime opponent, but we've seen Nashville play with a back five this year, mainly when Walker Zimmerman's out, as a way to sort of cover for that. This was one of the first times we've seen the top options in that formation. And we know Lovitz is one of the better attacking left backs in the world, in the league. Whoa, he just got elevated
in the world. Yeah, dude. Nice.
And Alistair Johnston can do it as well. And what I love about the opening goal is it's an underlap from Alistair Johnston with Mukhtar or Leal going wide, because Alistair Johnston's comfortable inside. He's a comfortable outside. And then you see that back three with Walker Zimmerman in it. I don't know if this is what they would use in a matchup on the road against the Revolution. They have a ton of attacking pieces that have been good this year that they're sort of trying to fit in and out. But this is another card, I think, in the hand for Gary Smith that we didn't maybe know about coming into this run, that if he can get some success with this, he's got options. He's got the ability to at least throw another team off. You have to plan for something else. And that's really exciting for Nashville fans.
By the way, plus 20 goal differential for Nashville. That's the best in the league. Better than the Revs team that we just spent 15 minutes fawning over.
We didn't give 15 minutes.
I don't know. When you went to Bruce Arena in the Sounders conversation, you got to tack clock. That up.
I came back.
Yeah, that's stoppage time, Charlie. That counts, man. Right, that's still 11. That's still
we gave 11.
Time.
11. We gave 11.
Oh, Anders says 11. Wow. We really got him out here tracking it. Well done, Anders. All right. Yeah. Let's get out our shovels real quick before we get the Canadian Championship in the mailbag and preview that we can get out of here. We are not going to do this long. Who are you burying? Just start throwing out names. Who we heaping dirt on? They don't have the line through their name just yet, but I'll start us off. I'm sorry, Toronto FC, it's done for you.
Yeah,
just that's, shovel. I just got a nice scoop. Just got a nice scoop of organic. Yeah, we gotta start easy.
Easy one.
Yeah, we gotta start easy. Who you?
Everyone knows Weeby's a big takes guy.
He's like, guys, hold on. I'm burying Cincinnati. Cincinnati's getting buried. Oh my! Of course they're getting buried.
Well, see, you just took Cincinnati. You roundabouted it by trying to burn me with it, but I think that was you taking Cincinnati.
No.
So Cincinnati, you're done. No. You're out. You're buried.
All right, go
Who
ahead.
Who else? Since I'm a list guy, I'll just throw Austin in there to keep it easy.
Yep. Are you going to bury Houston?
I mean, I was with Mike LaHood and Adrian Healy the other day on Twitter Spaces, and they were saying that the playoffs are out of reach. So the playoffs are out of reach for Austin. 0.76 points per game tells you that. Mm-hmm. Would you bury Dallas and Houston?
Definitely, I would definitely bury Houston. Dallas, they have 26 games played too. Ah,
they got 6 wins on the season.
I'm burying them.
The only thing with Dallas, just that they're out, is you never know what a new coach bump looks like.
Yeah.
But they have to go on a ridiculous run because, similar to Houston, the numbers with the games played, points, whatever, all of that's against them.
You're making up 7 points, essentially, and that means that the teams that you're chasing are not winning.
Right, because you have to jump 3 teams, all of which have played less games than you.
Yeah,
and
that's
Vancouver's
difficult.
Played 2 less.
How about in the Eastern Conference? Should we go ahead and heap dirt on the Fire?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie's drooling.
He's backing up the dump truck. He's like beep beep. How about the Red Bulls?
Here we go, guys. Are we burying the Red Bulls?
Why are you throwing it at me? I'm not the you guys are the ones who are out here throwing.
He's a baby Bulls guy. That's why I'm saying.
Yeah. You want to talk baby Bulls playoff run? We could talk about that big win
I'm
in Charleston
big
last night.
Bulls.
Serge Gomez with the goal, 3rd of the year for the 16-year-old. For the New York Red Bulls, I'm not going to bury them yet.
Okay. Is that
which also means I can't bury Columbus either? What
is that? Because they have 24 games played.
Yeah, it's also because.
But every team in the East above the playoff line has 25, other than Philly, who have 24 and are clearly better than the Red Bulls, even though they haven't been on.
So the only thing for the Red Bulls is I don't trust 8, 9, and 10 in front of them, but I do trust 5 through 7. So I think it's tough for them to get in, but I wouldn't be shocked if they finished the year in 8th, which means they're in the run, if that's fair.
Okay, but their run ends after more than a decade of is it 11 years right now?
Yeah.
Straight playoffs?
Yeah.
How about Western Conference? Climb it on up. San Jose, Vancouver. They're only 4 points back.
Yeah,
I don't think we can bury them, but probably we can heap a couple shovels on and just get the job started a little early.
I don't think so.
You don't think so? No chance?
Not at all.
I'm going to start digging, but I'm not going to
the space.
We're going to fill the wheelbarrow. Yeah. That way, when the time comes, we just have to tip it, and that's it for them. All right. Exactly. I mean, look, the playoff race is still open here. You know what the deal is the rest of the way. We're following the playoff line. There are, depending on the team, about 8 to 10 games left for everybody. So there are opportunities to make up ground.
So
this is the good time of year.
Vancouver's the last team that I would put. Like, Vancouver, I think, has the best chance of those three. Because of the run they've been on with Gault, the new coach, the ability to play at home, games in hand on everyone, I think they are above San Jose and LAFC.
Interesting. Even though LAFC have that 3 points.
I can't believe we're sitting here talking about LAFC and they're potentially not being in the playoffs.
Yeah, by the way, LAFC go to San Jose this weekend. That's Saturday night, 10 p.m. MLS Live on ESPN Plus. That is a huge game in the Western Conference.
Wasn't it an absurd game last time they played too?
It's always. I mean, anytime San Jose play, it's an absurd game. Just watch for trophies. That's it at this point. I mean, he's on like a generational heater. It doesn't matter. The ball's going in the back of the net. Vancouver hosts Dallas. That's another big one. Dallas could get buried, and Vancouver could push themselves up a little bit. Portland RSL is also a sneaky one in the West, kind of on that playoff line. And then you have some sort of must wins for current playoff teams. DC are below the line in the East. You got to win when Cincinnati comes to town if you want to be a
must
playoff
win.
Team. That's the deal. Colorado hosts Toronto. They've had some struggles lately. I talked to Marcel Balboa on Tuesday on the Twitter Spaces Power Ranking Show. He thinks they've left 6 points on the table in the last week and a half.
I think they all say that too, pretty easily, right?
Oh, yeah. Minnesota hosting Houston. Loons, you got Reynoso back. Got to win that one. And then in the East, it's Columbus below the line, Montreal above the line, Montreal going to Columbus. Columbus ahead of Campione's Cup. So
I would also add the Philly-Atlanta game. That's a must win for Philly. Looking at their schedule, they have a difficult schedule after that Atlanta game, and Atlanta has a relatively easy schedule.
Yeah,
they have to travel to Red Bulls. They have the Crew who are still alive and still,
but could make a playoff run.
You're right. At Cincinnati, that's kind of expected to win. It's almost a must win for Philly. Away at Montreal, not an easy place to play, and Montreal are a good team this year. Away at Minnesota. Home to Nashville, away at Toronto. Okay, that's a game you should win. Home to Cincinnati and away at New York City FC. They have a difficult schedule. This is must-win territory for Philly, considering where all the teams are in the middle of the Eastern Conference.
What are you looking at from this game, Dave? Philly, Atlanta. Joseph Martinez watches on. Felipe Cardenas is at training all the time, tweeting basically about his status. I think he's live on Twitter Spaces right now talking about it. There's some debate about whether Joseph had an MRI. There's some debate about whether he'll be available. It seems to me that he won't be against Philly. How important is that potential absence for them? And what does this game mean for Atlanta? Because they've won a ton of games, but this would be probably, other than maybe Orlando, the best opponent they've faced in this 7 wins and 8 run.
Yeah, I think I would look at them differently if they win this game, especially if they do it in a similar style. Because that's where, with Atlanta, we're trying to figure out, has the game flow gone their way? Has Barco just had a good week? Or does Gonzalo Pineda have an idea of how to make this team their best? And are they back to, well, we can imprint our style on the game. So it's interesting. It's interesting because you talk about a team in Atlanta that wants the game to be open, that wants it to be a little bit chaotic, and then a team in Philly that's going to press. And if they press and they don't get there, that's where the game opens up. And you've got Moreno running out of Kai Wagner in open space, and you've got Barco at his best because he's most comfortable when it's not against a setback, you know, low block. And you have Araujo now who can pop into anywhere and be dangerous. So that's what's interesting is, how does Philly handle Atlanta United? How often do they press? How open do they try and let the game be without losing their own principles? But I have a lot of confidence in this Philly group. I watched them play, and I still think they've got, while Shabilko's been not, you know, in form over the last month and a half.
None of their goal scorers have been.
Yeah, right. I still see the quality in all of them. I trust Bedoya. I trust Montero. I trust Martinez. So they still have one of the best midfields in the league. And across the back line, they can create chances from fullback. Both of their center backs can mark pretty much anyone in MLS throughout the course of a game. So I still think this is a Philly team that's going to finish much higher than seventh place, even though Charlie went through that run. But this is a huge opportunity to look at it. It's probably the best game of the weekend.
Bedoya said after the Champions League exit, and they played better against Club America than the scoreline, said that if we play like this, we are going to beat a lot of teams. Mm-hmm. We are going to rise the standings. Well, now it's time to back that talk up. Sporting KC Seattle, Sunday, 7 p.m. Eastern, FS1 Fox Deportes. By the way, that Philly-Atlanta game is Saturday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Univision, TuneIn, you can watch it for free on Twitter as well. SKC Seattle, though, maybe, I don't know, bigger game this weekend. That game or Philly-Atlanta?
So I'm only going Philly-Atlanta just because of League's Cup.
Agreed.
So it isn't like they're both teams. Yay. We're on the same page.
Boom.
It's that tandem. We back together. Let's go. See, it's beautiful football. This is doc.
Ole, ole. I'll give you your oles, all right?
Weeby, we'll send you an invite. We'll interview you for admission into our little club. And potentially, if your resume is good enough, we'll let you in.
I care about the community, so I think I have a good chance here. I got a good quality shot. You're right. I think SKC Seattle, though big, is bigger than Sporting than it is for Seattle, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's Sporting's opportunity Mm-hmm. And they like to say we don't get enough respect. Nobody's talking about us. And top in the West, they might be right about this, but it's sort of their opportunity to say, hey, look, the Western Conference in the playoffs is going to go through us. Here's our lead. If we win this game, we're going to extend that on you. We're going to have it at, depending on what the Rapids do here, potentially 2 points if the Rapids win and KC win, but potentially 4 or 5 overall. And then we're going to hold on to the rest of the way. We're getting Pulido back. It's not perfect yet. He's sort of been in and out. Johnny Russell's looking better. Gadi Kinda is coming back into the team. Still need to figure out center back health, but they've managed to do it so far without any consistency back there, really, certainly without Izzy-Matt Marin. This, to me, is a big statement time for Kansas City, a Kansas City team, by the way, that's drawn 5 times at home. That's not what they want from home games. This is a 3-point game for them. We'll see if they can get it. How about Austin FC, LA Galaxy? LA haven't won in 7 Sunday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, ESPN Deportes. Austin hosting. We talk about the Galaxy so much. We already buried Austin. Let's give Austin just a little bit of something here. What would you do the rest of the year if you're Josh Wolf? What do you need to see if you're an Austin fan or in the front office or if you're Josh Wolf to give you hope for the rest of the season? Dejete starting was a good start. It changed the way that they played, I thought. But, I mean, look, it just chaos against San Jose.
You want to see the relationship between Jurici, Pochettino, and Jete. You want to see, is that a core at a high level, mainly Jurici and Pochettino, that can be the crown jewel?
You're not counting Dominguez in that, Cecilio.
Oh, yeah, you would count Cecilio. Sorry. You count Cecilio Dominguez in that as well. You got to see, is that the group? They're clearly going to need to fill in at center back unless they think Roman is going to take a huge step. I think you need to find some other help for Alex Ring as well. Kolmanich is on loan, so you probably have to figure something out at fullback as well. But the key is, and I think what set them back this year was how late Jurici came in. Is that your triumvirate or quad, whatever you're going to call it, that is good enough to win in MLS? And if that's the case, then the rest of it you can figure out and you can build pieces in and you can find MLS veterans. You can go out and get TAM players. You can do the rest of it. The key is the top little piece of your roster good enough to compete in? And they're all healthy. And so your opportunity now to play them all together a couple times and see what happens the rest of the year.
Yeah, what I said on the Twitter spaces was that like some of the pressure is off now. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're not. But you have this opportunity, and it's not free because missing the playoffs is not free, but you have this opportunity, to, as you said, to build chemistry. So you don't have to do that next year, certainly in an attacking sense. And also to say, we better get on for sure center back, for sure midfield, I think. You know, they have a good first group, but some of the depth behind it hasn't exactly stood up and performed. And try to figure out a way to hit the ground running next year instead of doing what you did this year, because I completely agree with you. The idea of waiting on your DPs makes sense, but it also sets you back with the depth and the quality that the league has now to where if you can't even come close to putting the ball in the back of the net at a pace that the rest of the league is going to be on, you're just not going to win. They have minus 15 goal differential. They've scored 25
unless
goals.
Unless you have the defender of the year, which is what Nashville Correct. Did last year. And
Correct.
Austin doesn't have that.
Yeah, they have 25 goals this year scored. Only Cincinnati has fewer goals scored. And they've given up 40. It's just not a mix that can work. So we'll see what happens for Austin going forward. Before we get to mailbag, should we got to hop up the Voyagers Cup here. Opening night, right?
Canadian Championship.
Yeah.
Get it.
No,
get
not it, opening us. Night.
Was it?
No. Pacific oh already beat Vancouver.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
I
forgot
it was opening night for Montreal and Toronto. They entered
Pacific. Pacific is running things right
Boom.
Now.
Yeah.
Give Paul Modukah his love.
He has the number one team in CPL. Most goals scored. They play attractive, creative soccer. They open the game up. Then they go and beat Vancouver, an MLS team in Canadian Championship. They do it with like 40% possession. So completely different. And now they go and they're able to beat Cavalry on the road. This is the second time they beat Cavalry in 2 weeks, who Cavalry and Ford's the top two teams over the course of the first 2 years in CPL. They're the team that Pacific's chasing, and they did it in a gritty way. They ground out a 1-0 win. They held on, you know, in tough conditions. And so you're looking at a Pacific team that's able to win in different ways now, that's developed and has TFC in the semifinals to go to a Canadian championship in Paul Modukah's second year. He's been unbelievable. The club's been fun to watch. They've got good young players in this team that he's entrusted. Taryn Campbell, I think, could be a guy who gets pulled into Canadian roster over the course of the next year or so. depending on friendlies and what games are like. And it's really exciting, I think, for everyone involved with Pacific, and it should be for everyone involved in Canadian soccer, because you're looking at teams now. Halifax went toe-to-toe with Montreal as well until Balu Tabla got that late goal. So I think it's exciting what's happening in the CPL. I think it's exciting what's happening in Canada, and Pacific FC are leading the way.
Toronto, hey,
Vancouver Whitecaps, by the way. If you need his phone number, I think you should have it, but there are people you can reach out to call him.
If they don't have his phone number,
what's wrong in Vancouver.
Yeah, what are they doing? Yeah. Toronto FC also winners against York United, so they move on in the Canadian Championship.
The Toronto for, Derby.
Yes, for Jacob Schaffelberg. Two assists there. Pacific Toronto in the semis, and then Montreal Forge in the semis as well. So that competition rolls on, by the way. We talked about CCL spots. 2024 Canadian Championship gets a spot as well. So that will stay, as will the U.S. Open Cup, which we are now seeing, I think, the beginning stages of that
roll on as well. Do you want us to tweet at Nick Murray and ask him when it starts?
I don't know. I don't think we should do that. I already had some conversations with Nick this week. I think we can do it. All right. Quick mailbag here. We'll get out of here. I don't know what happened to Charlie Davies. It's like the disappearing act right now.
Charlie got so excited about Pacific FC. He left to go buy some gear.
Exactly.
He's headed to Vancouver Island right now. Let's start with this one. Gabe in KC. He said, "Hey, Extra Time, was listening to your comments on who could replace Lucci at FC Dallas. And the first person that popped in my head was Kerry Zvagnin over at Sporting KC. Dude's been around for like 12 years as his assistant head coach of a team that has a strong academy, but also recruits a lot of foreign veterans. He might be a good replacement, as much as I would hate to lose him." Gabe's in KC.
This is one of the sort of mysteries to me with MLS assistants who get hyped for coaching jobs, is that Kerry's just not really gotten that hype, and he really should. The question I have is whether he wants to make that move, or if there's a specific move he wants to make, or if he's just saying, look, assistant head coach in Kansas City is where I want to be right now. Because if you want a job like that, it's sort of incumbent on you in some ways to market yourself, or for your club to do that, or for you to express that interest. We haven't really gotten at least reporting that Kerry's interviewed. So I think Kerry Zvagnin would be an amazing candidate. The depth of knowledge, the relationships, the success he's had with Peter, I think he'd be an amazing candidate. I'm just not sure why there isn't more talk around him. Maybe somebody out there like Paul or Sam could fill us in.
Also the eyes. Bluest eyes in Major League
Maybe
Soccer.
Maybe the prettiest eyes in MLS. When you lock in with Kerry, you almost can't look away. You're just like, oh my God. Those things are sparkling, man.
Let's finish on this email. We don't have to respond. Just wanted to give a platform here to Jonathan Baldari, who says, "Dear partners in soccer, I'm writing to discuss the fallout of the League's Cup announcement on Tuesday. And at the risk of drifting into the Weeby sphere in terms of hype, I feel like this is the biggest development in MLS since everyone got together and decided to make this a seller's league. Aside from all the U.S. versus Mexico rivalry aspects and the TV and ad dollars at stake, I feel like the League's Cup will provide MLS with a unique opportunity to make a much-needed change to the schedule and transition to a separate fall and spring season. There are many reasons to make this change, mirroring Liga MX, weather, international breaks, as well as ability to shift most MLS games to spring rather than fall. Perhaps even shift all of Open Cup to fall, since CCL and playoffs would be played in the spring. The possibility for awesomeness are endless. I'm curious what you guys think. I'll hang up and listen." So we can hit that a little more next time as well.
Yeah, so in my Google Doc, I had a Apertura Clausura, but I'm not sure that is... I love it in theory. I'm not sure if that's actually in practice the best thing for the league, especially when it comes to sort of the opportunities given to young players. If you only have 17 games to make the playoffs, you're probably going to prioritize results there as opposed to development at times. Then again, we want every game to matter maximum amount.
But we also see in Liga MX, you can ride hot hands. So if a young player comes in, if an Anthony Fontana comes in and scores a goal or two, a Pepe, a lot of times in Liga MX, you'll ride that because it's enough to get you in the top 10 and get you into the Liga.
Yeah, I mean, look, my ultimate thing with all of this is that this relationship is going to, raise both leagues. But I also hope that there's a more robust, and it's starting to get there, transfer sort of interchange between the two, where you see MLS players as well as Liga MX players maybe switching sides at times. I just think that would be really intriguing for the region as a whole. We'll see if it happens. That's it for us. Charlie Davies disappeared. Didn't want to talk League's Cup anymore, I guess. Oh, come on, Charlie. 401-206-0MLS. Extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We have more mailbag stuff to get to. We'll hit it on Monday with Doyle and Kalen. In the meantime, enjoy the soccer this weekend, everybody. National TV games on Saturday and Sunday, Atlanta, Philly, and of course, Sporting Kansas City Sounders and Austin LAFC. Tune in. ESPN Plus is your friend as well. We'll see you on Monday.